You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 18th of August 2021 and you're listening to me, Simon Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, today I want to look at an example of hate speech against white people. And hate speech never seems to get prosecuted when it's people talking about whites. And obviously we are very careful here at Radio Albion in the way that we speak about others. We try to be sympathetic at all times, whereas our opponents just seem to say the most awful things about white people, and they are never accused of inciting hatred against us. And a lot of the time, it's on behalf of the mainstream media, and we'll see the mainstream media saying terrible things about white people, about our ancestors, calling us white supremacists, slave owners, saying we were responsible for slavery, or we oppressed non-whites with the British Empire, all that sort of thing. But we also get psychiatrists and sociology professors talking about things such as whiteness and wanting to do away with whiteness. And of course, what do they mean by whiteness? Well, they mean white people's identity, the way that white people are, and we would suggest that white people are charitable, merciful, predisposed to order rather than chaos, and we like to do what we can for others. And yet we are cast as being this terrible people that just oppressed everybody else, and the truth is we did not oppress other people. We brought them the gifts of civilization, medicine, education. We put a stop to slavery all around the world. We put a stop to different peoples enslaving one another and selling them. We've done incredible things that put ourselves in debt for centuries in order to help out the other peoples of the world. And yet you very rarely hear anybody talking about things like that. Instead, you hear people like the one I'm going to use as an example today, who is called Dr. Aruna Kilanani. And this actually came out about a month ago, and I've just had it waiting here, wondering when I was going to use it. The controversial psychiatrist who said that she fantasized about shooting white people during a panel at Yale University in April has doubled down on her attacks, saying white people are psychopathic, in a new interview. And remember, this professor, this doctor, she's giving this panel at one of the most prestigious universities there is in the world, Yale University, and she has not been charged with incitement to hate or incitement to violence. She's still giving her speeches, and she is a highly respected psychiatrist. Dr. Aruna Kilanani, who runs her own practice in Manhattan, delivered a talk titled Psychopathic Problem of the White Mind, virtually to medical students and faculty back in April, after being invited by the Yale School of Medicine's Child Study Center. So this is the sort of thing that doctors are learning about. They're learning that white people have a psychopathic problem, which is associated with our race. I mean, that she is associating psychopathic problems with a racial identifier here by saying it's to do with the white mind. Kilanani made stunning statements during her talk, including admitting she has had violent fantasies about shooting white people. And of course, we often see that white people are shot very often by non-whites. Far more often you see white people being shot by non-whites than you see non-whites actually being shot by whites. Thankfully, we don't have a shooting problem in Britain. We only have about 30 murders a year caused by shooting. But obviously in America, where guns are available, you have a much higher incidence of gun crime. And a lot of the time you get so-called random killings of white people. And they will say, well, this was a random killing. We have no idea why the shooter picked this person. Yet there was one thing that the shooter could tell about the person, even if he had never met them before, and that is that they were white. And in a lot of cases, we hear them talking about how they were riled up by what they saw on the television, about how the police were supposedly massacring black people. We hear all the time about how people were arrested and killed for being black. And of course, the real reason is that they were shot because they were resisting arrest. And this is what we see in the majority of these videos that Black Lives Matter put out. We see that the person that got shot was actually resisting arrest. I mean, we even saw the same thing recently on a soap opera here in Britain. They had their own Black Lives Matter storyline, and they had a black character, and he was having a mental breakdown. And he came out of his house when the police were trying to arrest him with a broken bottle. So obviously he had to be neutralized. The threat had to be neutralized. And then it was portrayed as the police had done a terrible thing here. But the fact is, he had a deadly weapon in his hand. And in most cases, in the videos that we see, where we're told that white police, racist white police, have killed a poor innocent black man, the black guy was resisting arrest, and he usually has a criminal record. So the police were being particularly careful around this character. So it's not very responsible of this psychiatrist to be talking about how she has violent fantasies about shooting white people, because it's effectively saying that it's okay to have these violent fantasies about shooting white people, because even people in academia have them. It is obviously must be acceptable to think these things. She said, I had fantasies of unloading a revolver into the head of any white person that got in my way, burying their body and wiping my bloody hands as I walked away, relatively guiltless, with a bounce in my step, like I did the world an effing favour, Kilanani said during the talk. So she's not looking for anybody that has done anything in particular. She's just looking for any white person. Any white person will do. So she's basically looking to kill somebody of a particular race. Why isn't this classified as race hatred? She hasn't got anything against this individual apart from the fact that they are white. And she wants to kill them. And then when she says she will walk away relatively guiltless, with a bounce in her step, thinking that she had done the world a favour by doing so. Kilanani is not white, and she is living in America, and she is giving this speech at Yale University. And if it wasn't for white men colonising the world and bringing education with them and the university system with them, she would not even be a psychiatrist. She would not even be giving this speech at the university. Talk about wanting to bite the hand that feeds you. Kilanani appeared on Mark Lamont Hill's Black News Tonight on Thursday and elaborated on the claims she made in her Yale speech. Would it be fair to say, based on your expertise, that white people are psychopathic? Hill asked Kilanani. I think so, yeah, she replied. The level of lying that white people do that has started since colonialism, we're just used to it. Now, I would say that white people are the most truthful people. We set up all sorts of institutions to investigate whether somebody is lying. We have such a thing as libel. We have our courts of justice, where if somebody is defamed, they can take the person defaming them to court, and they can. The whole point of the court case is to get to the truth of a matter. You swear to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth. It is all about the truth. The whole system is set up to prevent lying, and yet she thinks that white people are excessive liars. When pressed by Hill about what specific lies she was talking about, Kilanani said white people reframed the horrors of colonialization. Well, hang on a minute. When white people talk about colonialization, they are going to be talking about it from their point of view, aren't they? That's what history is. It is his story. It's not your story or their story. It's his story. It's an individual's story. It's the story of the nation and how the nation sees it, particularly the British. Obviously, the history of the British Empire is going to be told through the eyes of the British. And the motivation of most of the British that were involved in that empire was a good motivation. They wanted to help these peoples who did not have so many of the gifts of civilization that white people had. When they went to Africa, they were selling one another as slaves. They had no railways. They had no education system. They had no courts of law. When they went to India, again, they had no railways. They had no trade. They had no sanitation system. And they had no system of democracy. They just had warlords there. And the British people saw their role as being a good example to the world, setting a good example to the world, and educating these peoples that hadn't had an education with a view to handing their countries over to them once they had reached a certain standard of civilization. And that's what the British did. They gave these countries back to these peoples once they had reached a certain standard so that they could manage the democracy themselves. And that was the main motivation for the British Empire. Yes, lots of bad things happened. There were famines. There were bad people involved. There are always going to be bad people involved. That is just the nature of things. We don't just have all good people. But the majority of the people involved wanted the very best for the peoples in the countries that they saw themselves as being responsible for. And I would give an example of General Gordon as being one of these very good people. I would give an example of David Livingstone being another of these very good people that really put the lives of the non-whites almost ahead of their own. And they just wanted the best for these people, and everything they did was towards that. And they were held up as heroes of the British Empire. So the very fact that they were held up as heroes tells you that the mentality of the people involved looked to that as being a positive role model, not as a negative role model. Yes, there were horrors of colonialization, but there aren't always going to be horrors, aren't there? There's the horrors of war. The peoples that were colonialized were warring against one another, the particularly brutal, savage wars that they actually had, especially in places like Africa, where you had cannibalization and you had human sacrifice as well. When the pioneers went into America, a lot of the Red Indian tribes were on the side of the pioneers because the Aztecs and the Incas had been human sacrificing them, and they fought on the side of the conquistadors, and they fought on the side of the white people because they wanted to be free of the oppression that they were under from their own people. And the same in Africa. You had particular African tribes that have been decimated by slavery, and it was slavery by their own people. And they looked to the British as helping them. It's only over the last 50 years that since people have actually forgotten this history, that they've turned it around and tried to make out that the white man was the bad guy here. So I don't see how she is saying that white people have reframed this. And also because white people have pointed out the bad things to do with colonialism. I mean, we have here at Radio Albion, we did an episode on Winston Churchill where he talked about the famine that he engineered in India. It's not like we ignore the bad side of things. We've talked about other dreadful things that were done in India, but on the whole, what we did was positive. And as I pointed out, this Dr. Aruna Kulanani, she would not even be at a university teaching now if it wasn't for the benefits of education and medicine that we brought with us. She says, every time that you steal a country, you loot, you say you've discovered something, she told the host. This level of lies is actually a part of history. We don't say that we killed all these people, we got rid of all the Native Americans, we say we discovered America. You don't talk about the level of death, you don't actually talk about the level of what actually occurred. Well, if she's talking about America there was a war, wasn't there? There was the Indian Wars. There was a war for the territory, and that is what happens. We have limited territory in the world, and we keep expanding, and there isn't a country in the world that wasn't paid for in bloodshed. You have to defend your territory. And as white people, we try to get on with the people in the territories that we went to. We have always gone out and explored the world and tried to find places with resources and places where we could build farmsteads and set up outposts of civilization, and they did that in America. They discovered a country where the resources were not being developed, the land was not being developed, so they started to develop it, and they gave some of their gifts to the natives, and eventually some of the natives started cattle rustling and kidnapping women and going back on their deals, and eventually things got worse until there was a war. And instead of wiping out the Indians or turning them into slaves, which is what everybody has done in history, that's exactly what would have happened in India, that's exactly what would have happened in Africa and in China. Instead of doing that, the white people, once they had defeated the Indians, they gave them reservations, they integrated them, they named their great battle weapons after them in honor of them. The Apache helicopter and other weaponry has been named after them. They gave them a great honor because they were such fierce warriors. And when you have a battle, when you have a war, you get the spoils of war afterwards. By rights, they could have just genocided the Indians or enslaved them, but they didn't, because they were honorable, because they were white people. But they won that battle, and they won that land because they won that battle. And it's the same in every country, and it's been the same throughout history. Kulanani told Hill that white people's retelling of colonization sanitizes the violence, and that white people take credit for discovering things that already existed. Well, yes, they may have existed, but they may not have been recorded. There may not have been detailed recordings of them. They may have only been identified in a language that didn't actually have writing to go along with it. The whole point of white people discovering things in botany and zoology is so that we can then classify them as the species that they are and the subspecies that they are, and we can give them a Latin name and define exactly what they are. I don't think white people are saying, well, these things didn't exist until we discovered them. They were just saying, well, we are going to classify them and put them in their correct taxonomy, and we'll integrate them into our system so that we can relate them to other animals and other plant species from elsewhere in the world. According to her, that's not on. That's taking credit for discovering things that already existed. This level of discovery is everywhere, she said. You've discovered vegetarianism, you know. You've discovered yoga. Everything is a discovery, and actually, it's all stolen. Well, it's not stolen, is it, to start becoming vegetarianism or to start using yoga? I guess what she thinks here is that white people have been in Europe all this time, and it wasn't actually white people that developed the Vedas and the Hindu religion. Well, it was white people, so vegetarianism and yoga probably does go back to white people, but that doesn't matter. All these things exist in the world, and we use them in the same way that she uses everything that white people have, reading, writing, medicine, the university, and yet she begrudges white people for using yoga. I don't think anybody white claims to have discovered yoga or created yoga, and the very fact that if you say you've discovered something, it means you have uncovered it. And of course, if white people had not been in India for many centuries, possibly millennia, and then they discover that people there are doing yoga, then of course they have discovered yoga. I mean, the problem here is that she's looking at everything from a universal point of view rather than looking at it from a white man's point of view, which is the way that everything was done up until recently. Everything was looked at from the particular point of view. And she is doing the same. She's alternating between looking at things from a universalist perspective and then looking at things from an individual perspective from her own ethnicity. The comments seem to double down on her April remarks, where she went as far as to say that white people feel they are being bullied when people of colour bring up race, and described it as a psychological predicament. Well, I think white people are being bullied, aren't they, when we're being told that whiteness needs to be got rid of, that we have white privilege, that we should feel guilt for things that our ancestors did centuries ago, that because our ancestors were slave owners, that we somehow should pay up to black people today. Never mind the fact that black people were slave owners as well, and they were the original slave owners, and they sold them to us. So I think it's quite right. White people do feel bullied when subjects of race come up. And because we cannot talk positively about our race, we have to talk negatively about our race and positively about all the other races. Nobody else is treated in that way. This Dr. Kilanani, she is encouraged to talk positively about her race, and yet she doesn't return the favour. She wants to talk negatively about our race. She says they feel that we should be thanking them for all that they have done for us. They are confused, and so are we. We keep forgetting that directly talking about race is a waste of our breath, she said. Well, we have done lots of things for these other races. We've done lots of things for the world around us, but that's because it's in our nature to do things for others. And I hope it isn't in her nature to be so ungrateful for the things that have been done for her. But it is a very common affliction that some of these academics seem to have. She then says, we are asking a demented, violent predator who thinks that they are a saint or a superhero to accept responsibility. It ain't gonna happen. Well, I don't think white people are saints or superheroes, but I do know that white people have only tried to do their best as regards the situation that they find themselves in. I do know that white people tried to turn slavery into a benevolent institution, unlike the Arabs, who would castrate the male slaves when they got them. The white people would ensure that the male slaves also had a female slave bought for them so that they could enjoy conjugal rights and have a family, that sort of thing. The way white people look at things is to try and make things easier for everyone and to make life better for everyone. I think there's a resentment here that she wasn't able to do these things for herself, and her people weren't able to do these things for herself. She says they have five holes in their brain. It is like banging your head against a brick wall. It's just like sort of not a good idea. Well, I think it is a good idea to talk about race. I think we do need to talk about race, but not in this unrealistic way. I mean, we need to be careful. We need to be careful that we don't incite hatred against other races. But we should be able to talk about racial differences, because when you talk about racial differences and you understand the racial differences, then you understand the reasons why there are these differences in life outcomes, and you don't end up blaming the other races then. You don't end up thinking, well, if only they worked a little bit harder, if only they got up a little bit earlier in the morning, if only they didn't sleep around so much. Instead of thinking like that, you understand that these are strategies that they have developed because they're different to us. They are a different race, and if something has a different form, then it has a different function. So you shouldn't expect these other races to behave in the same way that white people do. And when you understand that, then you can see things a little bit more from their point of view, which is the way that we should be, which is the gift that we have as white people, is we can be objective. We can see things from other people's point of view. And when we understood this, and when we understood that we had this great gift, that some of these other races may not be so good at. We understood that with this gift came a duty and a responsibility, a duty to the rest of the world, a responsibility to set a good example and to be the very best people. And it was that mentality that was responsible for building all these great civilizations, Australia, America, and setting them up so that they could be run by other countries, such as in India and in Africa. It was white people's sense of charity that encouraged us to do this. And yet she just sees this as some kind of oppression, some terrible thing that we did for these people. Of course, looking back on it, I think now it would have been best just not to interfere, because once you have interfered, there is a moral imperative that you have to stay involved. Because you have got involved, you have to stay involved. And I think it would have been best to just leave these peoples to develop at the pace that they were developing at, rather than trying to fast forward them up to the level and standard of civilization that we had as whites. I think we should have just left them alone, but we didn't leave them alone. We did interfere. And so we now have this moral imperative to continue doing whatever we can to help them out. And I would suggest we should try to help them out in the countries that they're in. But we should not encourage them to come into our countries. We should not be facilitating that, because then our countries will just end up looking like their countries. After audio of her 50-minute lecture was published on Substack by journalist Barry Weiss earlier this month, Killarney's practice was bombarded with negative reviews that accused her of being anti-Semitic. And I'm not sure where the anti-Semitic pieces come from in this. Yale professor of social and natural science Nicholas A. Christakis slammed her racism, which he said must be soundly rejected. And I would say that it's not so much racism as anti-whiteism, because we're told all the time that non-white people can't be racist because they don't have the power to be racist. In order to be racist, you have to be the person with the power in society. So if they're going to say that non-whites don't have power in society and they can't be racist, then what they're doing is simply being anti-white, isn't it? That's what she is doing here, by saying that she fantasizes about killing white people, anybody white, it doesn't matter who they are. That is quite clearly being anti-white. And I suspect people are saying that she's being anti-Semitic as a substitute for saying that she's being anti-white. The professor here, Nicholas A. Christakis, said the racism expressed by Dr. Aruna Killarney is deeply worrisome and counterproductive. Of course, as an invitee, she is free to speak on campus, but her views must be soundly rejected. And that's fair enough. Everybody should be able to speak their point of view. But when we have white people that want to go and speak on a campus, say somebody white wants to go and speak on a campus, and they're just going to be talking about transgenderism, say, and they wish to say that transgenders cannot actually be biologically the other sex, well, then they will get banned from the campus. I mean, this has happened to Germaine Greer. It's happened quite a lot to these trans-exclusionary radical feminists that like to call themselves TERFs. So even people on the left that deviate slightly from the politically correct narrative will get banned from campus, let alone somebody that actually talks about nationalist policies, let alone somebody from Patriotic Alternative. I can just see someone from Patriotic Alternative being invited to speak at a university campus. And if they went there, you certainly wouldn't hear them talking about fantasizing about killing non-whites. You might hear them talking about voluntary repatriation, rewarding people of a different ethnic heritage to go back to the ethnic homelands that they originally came from, and giving them a reward or an incentive to do so. What you would hear from the nationalist point of view is a sympathetic point of view to these people. And what we see here is that this Dr. Aruna Killarney, she's not sympathetic in any way to white people. She is hostile to them straight down the line. And this is what is going on at universities. This is what academics are talking about. I'm surprised she didn't actually mention whiteness here, because that is their main buzzword at the moment, is doing away with whiteness. And this is why we now have a society where, just to say something simple like white lives matter, is now accused of being racist. If you just say something simple like it's okay to be white, you're accused of being a white supremacist. Just for saying that you think it is okay to be white. You don't think that white people should be feeling guilty. You don't think that white people should be wiped out like this Dr. Aruna Kulkarni does. If you have that point of view, you're going to be accused of being racist and a white supremacist. But if you talk about how much you hate white people, then you're going to get invited to speak at a university. Everything is upside down. And I say today, I just wanted to highlight this as an example of the way that our opponents talk about us compared to the sympathetic way that we talk about them. You would never hear any of us saying anything remotely similar to what this Aruna Kulkarni is saying here. And it really does show the hypocrisy in these race hate laws, and the way that it's just seen as being okay for people to say the most violent and hateful things about white people. And yet when white people talk about non-whites and we try to talk about them sympathetically, we are the ones that get accused of being the haters. Of course, we are not the haters, and anybody that listens to Radio Albion knows that. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.